My name is Stephen Ridge. I go by Steve Ridge. I'm a licensed private investigator in Iowa, but I do work nationwide. Actually, I do work internationally now, too, but primarily nationwide and pretty much exclusively on cold case missing persons or murder cases. And all of my work is essentially pro bono. It's kind of a way for me to give back to an industry that was pretty good to me. I had a long broadcast career and time running a research and consulting firm nationally. And so I've come in contact with a lot of media people, probably hired 400, 500, 600 people over my career, and in radio, television, newspaper. So I was asked actually by the folks at People Magazine Investigates if I would take a look at this case, because I had just worked with them on filming a two-hour special for Discovery Plus, which will air in October, on a case down in Kansas. And once I took a look at it and heard the particulars, I agreed to get involved and decided that the best thing I could do was generate some attention and publicity by offering a $100,000 reward for the finding of the remains, if they exist, the remains of Cherry. We proceeded to arrange a news conference here a few months ago. It got quite a lot of coverage and attention, and it generated a vast number of tips. And one contact I had, it was from an individual who was quite reluctant to come forward and was very concerned about, you know, keeping their identity private and didn't really want to deal with the police because they feared that coming forward would make them a, you know, candidate for scrutiny. So after 10 days of go back and forth, we finally connected, and he decided to tell me the whole story. And his story was essentially that he was with an individual who knew Cherry very well, who was on a phone call that he overheard. And then after that individual got off the phone call, they said to him, "Well, I guess now you know that I was responsible for Cherry's abduction or was involved in it. And so I'll just tell you the whole story." And that person allegedly proceeded to tell this tipster, you know, who I have gotten to know very well, the whole story of the abduction and all of that. And then as a result, I followed up and was in touch with via mail, because I have never been put on the visitors list for this individual who's in prison. And I reached out to see if I could verify any of the information. And the communication that I have gotten is that the individual denies personal involvement, but acknowledges that two of his family members were directly involved in the abduction. So those two pieces of information together are, you know, pretty compelling. I've done a lot of work in terms of checking out my source or my tipster. All of the information that I've gotten is very solid. I think this person's heart is in the right place. They're very trustworthy. Their story has not changed. They're fully committed, prepared to do a lie detector test at any time, and testify, you know, in court or by affidavit, whatever's required.
So the person who you spoke with, who's incarcerated, is that the person who told you to, who gave you the information?
No, that's, I thank you for asking. No, the original tipster, is not in prison. He's just an individual who, was, you know, I guess an associate or a friend of the person who's incarcerated. And so he was with him and overheard the incarcerated person's, phone conversation. And then separately, I tracked that person down and I've communicated with them only via mail.
So at this particular time, when you found out this information, what were your next steps?
What I did, I tried to verify as much as I could and kind of nail it down. And then I did pass everything along to Pennsylvania State Police so that they could follow up with a more formal investigation.
So have you relayed this information? You had relayed this information, I'm certain, to Sherry's mom.
Oh, absolutely. I've spoken to Janice. I've spoken to Sherry's Angels, the group that kind of was formed to support her mother and, some of the expenses and things like that. And they've all been very receptive and very helpful. Janice's mom's a wonderful person. We communicate on a regular basis, and she is extremely grateful for me coming in, because it seems like this has become the catalyst to break the case open. And that's what they were hoping for. And that seems to have worked pretty well.
Are you still in contact with the incarcerated individual?
Yes. Yeah. I'm still having mail contact, and I'm hoping that that's going to transition to visitation, which, has to be, visitation is only triggered by the incarcerated person. They have to put you on a visitation list in order to allow you to either have a video call or appear at the prison in person. And I'm still hopeful to, get into prison. I've had great success with visiting people in prison to be able to look at them face to face and question them. And so I'm really hopeful that I'm going to be able to do that before this, before too much longer.
So what makes this individual's, of course, people will say he's incarcerated. Why would you believe him? What makes you think he's a believable witness?
Well, he was in the right place at the right time. He was definitely in the neighborhood where Cherry lived at one time, and he, along with his family members, would have had pretty ready access to Cherry in the neighborhood. And so, I think it all seems to fit together, quite clearly.
So what are some of the questions that you asked him?
Well, I essentially, I had written a letter, and I just told him that I was looking into the whole thing and would like to come visit him. And essentially, he wrote back, and in some of the communication, he went on to deny any personal involvement. But said that he would, he did acknowledge that he had family members that were involved and that it had been hidden and covered up all this time, and he was prepared to tell the truth and clear his name personally, and didn't mind singling out family members that were involved.
Wow. So people here locally, we've been on this journey. It's been, 40 years since the disappearance. So what is it that you want people to know as far as the case is concerned? Because people wonder. People want to know, what's the next steps?
Well, absolutely. And I always encourage patience. I've been working on a case in Iowa where a morning television anchor went missing 30 years ago. I've been working on that case for 7 years, and I haven't announced a final outcome, although I pretty well have solved the case in my own mind. I just need to raise the evidence. But in the case of Cherry Mahan, I've only been involved for about 3 months, and this has all just come together very quickly because the publicity generated some fresh tips and convinced this gentleman with information that it was time to come forward He said it was eating him alive, and he felt like he needed to share what he had. And so at this juncture, I'm actually still hoping for more tips or more confirmation from other people. Generally, there are multiple people who have information when these things happen. And I think now that one key person has come forward with information and one potential person who's in, you know, may have been involved has opened up, I'm hopeful that more people will come forward and share what they know so that we can piece together this case and potentially move it to an indictment or arrest and prosecution.
So as regarding Sherry, is it Sherry or Sheree?
Oh, it's Cherry.
Cherry.
It's actually
it's like
Cherry.
Cherry. Oh, okay.
Yeah, but instead of a Y, it's I-E.
Okay, Cherry. Yeah. Okay, talk to me a little about her mom in this state of mind. I'm hearing this, the latest information, and it could be some turning points for her. How has she been, and what has she said regarding the latest developments?
Well, she's extremely grateful. She's a very humble person. She's a very patient person. And so she really is, I think, very personally gratified that, you know, that this is coming together and that we're, you know, finally going to solve it. But she also is, I think, somewhat cautious in terms of just making sure that, you know, we're really gonna get it done. And the biggest thing to her and to me, frankly, is finding Cherry's remains. That's why my $100,000 reward offer is actually not for a arrest and conviction of anyone. It is simply for finding her remains, a person that can lead us to her remains. And the reason I do that is if we find the remains, it almost guarantees that the case will be solved, because it's missing the body is what makes a no body circumstantial case is a very difficult thing to make happen. Whereas once you have a body, there are always clues, no matter how decomposed or where it is or what have you. Once you have a body, the rest of the pieces begin to fit together pretty quickly.
So I know you said you've turned the information over that you had to state police. Have you heard from them since turning over that information?
I have not heard anything. I actually have learned to kind of give these things some time. People tend to get pretty impatient when information comes out like this, because it's kind of like they want, well, why don't they run out and arrest somebody? Well, it takes more than that. And, you can really, defeat the purpose of, a formal investigation if you move too fast. You really need to get additional information together. And that's why I continue to solicit information, because I think there are other people that have information that could help build the case. And I'm confident that I'll hear back from the state police. They were very eager when I came across this original tipster who opened up to me. They were very eager to have details of that. And they moved almost overnight to actually have a lengthy interview with the individual. So they've taken this very seriously.
How did you connect with this tipster?
He reached out via email anonymously. The first email basically said, are you the private investigator on the Cherry Mahan case? And I said, yes, I was. And he asked me more about my background and whether I was trustworthy, and wanted to know if, I was collaborating directly with the police day to day. He just was very skeptical and nervous, because he does have a family, but 40 years ago he had young children, and he said he was very fearful of what might happen to his children if he came forward, so he just stayed quiet, you know, essentially for 40 years, but it was eating him alive. And so finally we went back and forth, and he finally gave me his phone number and said he was ready to talk. And he was able to, in excruciating detail all of the facts of the case.
Wow. So this tipster isn't a family member or friend of the family or anything like that?
Not that, but an acquaintance of the family. He's not a strong acquaintance, but he definitely knew the family, and they knew who he was.
Oh, well, this is interesting, to say the least.
Some news
is always good news. You know, sometimes you don't hear anything, and you know, then when you do hear something like this, it gives you hope. So
yes, absolutely. You know. Yeah, no, and I think in this case, I think we're well on our way to jarring this whole thing loose.
You're confident that you're on the right track.
Yeah, I'm absolutely confident. And when you get an individual who, you know, is in prison, says they are not responsible, but their family members are, I mean, that's a confession, you know, of guilt on behalf of family members. And so I think that that's going to be quite a bit to work with. If you add to that the witness testimony that I have that this individual, you know, claimed to have been involved. So I think those two elements make this, a very likely path forward to resolution.